Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I are going to talk about his player grades that he wrote up at Forbes. He graded a lot of the core pieces of the Cavs season. Now, he did not do every single player, but I think it's a really good analysis of the guys that really, really matter on this Cavs team, and you'll get a good feel. So we dove into those, disagreed a little bit, actually. So if you're looking for a little debate on your podcast, Evan and I have you covered. Also, on today's show, we talk about J.B. Bickerstaff, Cavs head coach, and Colin Sexton, the team's point guard, obviously, talking about them making the playoffs next year. Yeah, we're talking about the playoffs and the Cleveland Cavaliers, so stay tuned for that. We also are going to launch a book club here amid this quarantine, so go to the Locked On Cavs Twitter page, at Locked On Cavs. And we're going to have four options for books there. We're going to have Loose Balls by Terry Pluto, The Blueprint by Jason Lloyd, Return of the King by Brian Windhorst and Dave McMenamin. That's the book about the 2016 title team. And we're going to have Ryan Jones's LeBron biography, Believe the Hype, that we talked about with him earlier this week on the podcast. If this goes well, perhaps we'll revisit some of these, but what we're going to do is in that poll, whatever gets the highest vote total is what we're going to do for the book club. So please check that out if you're so inclined to join us on a fun basketball re-journey. And, you know, if we get, perhaps if, depending on what we get, we could book some people to talk about those books in the coming months if the things kind of go right there. But please let us know which one you want to read, and we'd love to, again, get as much feedback as possible, so please consider going to voting in that poll. But again, today's show is about the playoffs. Today's show is about the grades that Evan wrote at Forbes. And without further ado, here's today's show.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's got Xbox at him today at the cue.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots, Colin Sexton for two.
All right, Evan, let's get into it. So according to some quotes that came out, first via Colin Sexton at Forbes and then via J.B. Bickerstaff, which was on a Wine and Gold United conference call moderated by John Michael, who I quite like.
Are you kidding me?
But this is, just so people know, this is the official Cavs like membership group. It's like modeled, it's like a crappy version of like a soccer club's like supporter group. That's the model of it. I think that's the business model behind it. This is something you only get access to if like you pay for it. Then I think put this like they streamed it. So like I do think people like could listen to it like kind of as it was happening. I came across the audio later on, but
I'll say that answers my question. Like, so how did Chris Fedor get access then?
Yeah, but the thing about this is that I think is my first gripe here is just like, number one, look, like, just give us a Zoom call with J.B. Bickerstaff.
Yeah, pretty you know? Much. Like, what would his background be, you think? Just a quick, like, you know, unrelated question before we actually get serious about this.
What if JB is really an Animal Crossing? And he's just like, it's just like his like Animal Crossing like locale that he's built for himself, whatever his island is, Bickerstaff Island.
You know, yeah, I could see that. Him and his dad probably just hang out and chill. JB's married, I believe, so maybe his wife, and if he has kids. I don't know much about JB personally, so.
Yeah, I don't either. Cavs. I also know nothing about Darius Garland. I just want to keep reiterating that.
Same. We'll talk about him later on, but
yeah, he has a TikTok account. That's something I've learned during this break.
Huh?
But I've learned nothing about Darius Garland, the human being.
I know he likes to play video games with Dylan Windler and Kevin Porter, and I am going to assume the three of them are tight, which is, you know, encouraging if the three of them are going to be here long term. And, just kind of annoying. I don't know. It's just weird that, and annoying more so, like, we know nothing about him. Speaking of annoying, I just want to say are going to make the playoffs next year.
100%, yeah, let's talk about that. I just want to say, Cavs, we can help you if you just like make two people available a week, three people, and we will write about what they're saying and what they're doing. If you let us talk to them, and then you get coverage of your team. I don't know why that's such a crazy idea. Anyway, okay, so here's what JB Bickerstaff said. Quote, I'm confident that we're heading in the right direction. I think we've got the right leadership in place with Kobe. Oh, sorry, this is the wrong quote. Okay, I think our responsibility is to keep improving. You always look outward. You're always doing your job to see what players you're going to get in the draft, what free agents may be available. But for us as a coaching staff, our priority is developing the guys we have here and who we can identify to take the biggest step that makes us the team we want to be. And that's a playoff contending team. That's where focus is right now. I trust our front office. They work tirelessly and are prepared. And again, it's a small sample size. But if you look at the way we competed over that stretch, there's no reason we can have that conversation about achieving that goal for next year. That is just flatly, along with what Colin Sexton said in an interview with one of the Forbes contributors, along with that covers the NBA as a whole. That is setting some very, very clear expectations for the playoffs. And I just want to say, like, my just take on this, and I'm curious who yours are, Evan, is just like, how about we walk before we run? How about we just, as a franchise, if I'm the Cavs, I'm just saying, let's just like be normal for like, let's get through a season with like a head coach not being fired and like your star players like openly just like hating the coach you hired and hyped up a bunch and all kinds of just avoidable nonsense. If you can just do that, then let's talk about, you know, getting to the playoffs.
No, I 100% agree. And there's like, okay, I can understand maybe where they're coming from. If you bring back this exact team plus a top five pick, assuming
without Tristan Thompson, that's the thing. You're almost certainly losing Tristan Thompson.
You sign and trade him for some type of return to maybe get something out of that. So assuming that, sure, maybe the Cavs could sniff the eighth seed, but I could see them finishing on the outside as well. And I think I'd be even more annoyed if the Cavs tried to legitimately push for the playoffs next year when they're still, you know, 2 years into rebuilding the life after LeBron James, part two. And you completely fuck that up by getting a terrible draft pick when maybe next, I don't know much about next year's draft. I haven't bugged Trevor about it yet. So what if there's a better talent in the draft next year that could really push the Cavs over the edge? Like we talked about, like they don't necessarily have the guy. So, I mean, you can have a nice collection of pieces and either you don't make the playoffs and you finish with a crappy draft pick, or you get the pleasure of getting crushed by Giannis and the Bucks in the first round. So, I mean, pick your poison here. Neither sound really that great. And I appreciate the confidence that Colin and JB have in this Cleveland team. And like I said, this is assuming that we're fairly certain Andre Drummond's coming back, but this is assuming the Cavs don't trade Kevin Love this summer and he comes back as well. And Darius Garland doesn't play like meh his sophomore season. And Colin Sexton, for some reason, goes even more nuclear than he has. Like, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, needs to happen for this to happen for the Cavs, because I just don't see it. And I think it's a little bit naive and maybe it's a little bit of wishful thinking. And the Cavs were on pace to win 23 games this year. That'd be quite the jump. Well, let me pull up the standings before I sound like a total ass. Bear with me here.
Yeah, the Cavs are 34 games back of the number one seed. And they are 11 games back of the 8 seed.
Correct. So that means if things were going the way they were today, and that means they would be on pace right now to win 37 games. I don't know if Cleveland has talent, and I don't know if a first-round pick in this year's draft is going to make the difference for the Cavs to somehow win 14 more games compared to what they're on track to win this year.
I don't think you're going to get like the kind of rookie that's going to come in and kind of raise you up. I think if you're looking at improvements, here's what has to, I think, happen for the Cavs to make the playoffs next year. If this is going to be like a real thing, here's what has to happen. Number one, Colin Sexton probably has to take another step up. you're just having that happen. Number two, I think kind of to link these two guys together, assuming Kevin Love and Andre Drummond are both on the team next year, I think both those guys need to kind of be locked in from day one. Those are guys that have to kind of compete on both ends, kind of play to their role a little bit more. And that's more about Drummond, the role thing, than it is Kevin. But like those guys will have to kind of, I think, do a lot of the work to kind of carry that team there. And Larry too. You know, you would need a lot more from Darius Garland. You need a big leap from Darius Garland from what he was this year to next year. If he's going to play 30 minutes a night or whatever, that has to happen. KBJ has to take another step. I think Jetty needs to take another little step up to be kind of a more consistent rotation piece. And then you need someone like Dylan Windler, your rookie, whatever other guys you're going to bring in, and you're not going to really have cap money to spend. I think you're just hoping that this group can improve enough to get there. I think that when I look at the East, here's just the teams I would feel more confident about next year, just kind of going into the year about making the playoffs. Okay, so you have the Bucks, obviously very good, should stay very good. Toronto, you know, I think that's just like, you know, we'll see what happens with some of the free agents, but like that's just a good organization. And I, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with Gasol or whatever, but we'll see what kind of goes on there. Boston, obviously, Miami, obviously, I think Indiana with Oladipo. More recovery time for him. That's only going to help him. You know, Philly, you know, who knows, but they're obviously insanely talented. Brooklyn's going to get a certain guy named Kevin Durant back, assuming he's going to be Achilles isn't an issue. And Kyrie, you know, Orlando obviously is a good defense, well coached. You know, we'll see what kind of goes on there. But then you have Washington who has Brad Beal. They're going to get John Wall back, assuming he's kind of good to go. And then if you look at the teams the Cavs are kind of clustered in right now, like, I would say that assuming things kind of break right for them, Atlanta has the better odds of taking that step up from bottom of the East to that playoff contention, just because they have Trey, they have John Collins, you know, Clint Capella is going to come in and provide something for them. You know, maybe he's not any different than Drummond, but like they're just sort of, to me, strike me as a team more poised to take that kind of leap. That being said, I don't want to say it's impossible. I am pro players trying to compete for that. I just don't know if I would be trying to set that as the expectation, because I think when you get ahead of yourself before you're ready, that just leads to hasty decisions and trying to fix something that isn't really broken in the first place or is actually on the path to getting fixed, but you're kind of rushing it and then forcing it to kind of those pieces to come together when they're just not naturally happening.
No, I agree. And I think the Cavs still need to. There's a lot of, just like I said, a lot of variables, and a lot of those teams you listed are currently better or maybe are ready to take the next step. I think Atlanta is, like, you know, definitely one of those teams like who are kind of in a similar situation to Cleveland, but I don't know. Maybe Lloyd Pierce isn't the answer. Maybe they hire a coach who can kind of put all these pieces together. Maybe their general manager really doesn't know what he's doing and he's running it like a fantasy team where he's just getting like a lot of pieces that don't work. Who knows? But I feel like Atlanta is going to be that next team and maybe bumps another team out. But there's a lot of other teams in the Eastern Conference, at least, that have established star players. Like you said off the top, like Milwaukee with Giannis, you have Miami with Jimmy Butler, you have Philadelphia with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, and then you have teams like Toronto that are legitimately good, and you have teams like Indiana who are exceeding a lot of expectations this season, and they were just bringing Victor Oladipo into the fold. Like, a lot of stuff here that, you know, is working against Cleveland, and I think it's, you know, like you said, it's admirable. Like, sure, go ahead, feel confident with your teammates, and maybe like the change in quote unquote culture and like the overall atmosphere in the locker room with JB kind of taking, or not kind of, but taking over as head coach. Like, yeah, maybe that certainly helps, and maybe having a full training camp underneath him, the Cavs actually look a little bit more competitive and, you know, just like a normal basketball team. Like, and I think you said it best as well. Like, why don't the Cavs learn to walk before they start running? Like, they need to just kind of establish a comfort level and rapport, because I feel like those 54 games with John Boeheim as head coach kind of made the Cavs go stagnant in terms of this rebuild. And now maybe it's a lot of like dead coach drop and things like that. But I also just feel that JB, you know, we maybe need a larger sample size of him at head coach, because I don't know. If the Cavs make the playoffs, sure. Like, if they're like that kind of team, extra great. Like, that's at least, it'll be fun to watch them when you and I cover games in person, if, you know, fans and media are allowed back in the arenas. But at the same time, it's a delicate walk, tight walk you have to walk here. And there's a lot of stuff, you know, the Cavs need to figure out before they can actually start thinking about the playoffs. And I still think, like, maybe 2 or 3 years from now is more of a realistic target for the Cleveland to start, like, really knocking on that door.
So how, give me just a percentage, Evan, of the chances you think the Cavs make the playoffs next year.
I want to say 20%. Oh. There's a 20% chance. Like, and that's if everything goes in their favor. And for some reason, like, I don't know, maybe, I don't know, maybe a team just completely implodes, like, in spectacular fashion. But maybe you could talk me down to 20% to maybe, like, 10%. Like, you know, let's go with 10%. I'm giving the Cavs a 10% chance to make the playoffs next year. What about you, buddy?
I'm going to go somewhere in that 15 to 20 range. I think it's possible. Stuff needs to go right. Stuff will be unpredictable. Stuff will happen that we're not expecting to happen now, or that we're not even thinking about happen now. So, you know, but I would just say, I'm more good with Colin kind of throwing it out there than I am the coach. I get that that's sort of the organizational push. Again, I would love to know what Kobe Altman thinks of the team. Kobe Altman, do a Zoom media conference. Like, what do you
know what Kobe Altman thinks of the team? You think he's going to be overwhelmingly positive about the whole situation and really be like a good used car salesman and like sell me on this?
I would
down 2000 Ford Taurus, and then
I would prefer that. He's like 100% like selling you turnips at 100 bells and then being like, I'm only going to buy these back for 45.
Now that's a reference I get.
I'm in.
The stock market is a dangerous game, kids.
Yeah, don't play it. But I would prefer that to just not having no idea what he thinks about anything.
Yeah, well,
you know, knows? Even if I think what he's saying is bullshit, I'd rather just hear from him. Okay, quick break. We'll be back. Evan did some player grades at Forbes because he writes words, and we'll be back to talk about those right after this. All right, Evan, we are back. Let's talk about your player grades. I'm going to let you lead this because you did these. You did a great job on these. Give me your... You did. These are wonderful. You can find them in the link below. Let's just pick who you want to talk about first here.
Well, for some context first, yes, I do write. I took about a solid month off, and, you know, I had a lot of rust. And for those of you who listen to Chris and I talk about LeBron's rookie season and my interview with Austin Peterson, I seemed a little off because I was running on fumes in terms of sleep and, you know, just like not having a balanced diet. And then I got a good night's sleep after that, and I'm a lot sharper today, but the reason why we recorded on a Tuesday and that didn't publish till Thursday is because I spent the better part of Wednesday cleaning it up. And then I thought and sat on it. I'm like, oh, I'll just publish it Thursday night, whatever. But I wouldn't say it's good. But I don't know if you watch Bob's Burgers, Chris, but you ever see the scene where Bob is saying, I'm literally grasping at straws? That's how I felt doing this. But let's just start with the biggest man. Well, before Andre Drummond showed up in the room, Kevin Love, I gave him a C for the season, and maybe my fan glasses were on a little bit here, and I like went back, and so to be fair, I did give him a C+ at first. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to knock him down just a couple percentages, but I think Kevin was great on the floor. Like I said, he was averaging 17.6 points to go with 9.8 rebounds and 3.2 assists, and he only missed 9 games this season, which, knowing Kevin Love's injury history, pretty admirable. But all the bullshit and everything else that was going on off the court and even on the court, like with his bad body language and us playing body language doctors in the press box and watching it from home, I feel like that's just kind of holding him back. And I feel like that really ultimately, and from what I heard, did play a part in him not getting moved to the trade deadline. And maybe part of it also is the Cavs just kind of trying their best to not get a low return on their all-star player, but maybe Kevin Love's not really going to get what they're looking for. But, you know, that's just semantics at this point. We just got to look towards the future. But, you know, I think Kevin gets a C. I mean, solid statistically, but overall just kind of a dick. So that's where I'm at with him.
I cannot get some of the Kevin stuff like out of my brain because I understand that like he got very frustrated. I understand that like he had a lot of stuff to feel. I think the effort level wasn't there a lot of the time. I think some of the attitude stuff, like when he chucked the ball at Jetty and was just like pouting about the Collins stuff, like didn't help. Clearly he and John Beilein did not get kind of see eye to eye in that. I think Kevin, you know, kind of did own up publicly at the very least to kind of what he said to some of the stuff that he did and kind of his behavior. We'll see what happens this offseason. I think your grade of a C is pretty right. The injury history really lucked out. You did say, though, one thing that I don't know if I agree with is all signs point to finding love a new home this upcoming offseason. I think just if the salary cap dips at all, going to be so much harder to move on from him.
On the back of my mind while writing this, but I'm just assuming right now that everything's going to be okay. But
yeah, actually, no, just for everyone, I'm saying
salary cap does dip. Yeah. Kevin Love's not getting traded.
I think next year is going to be a real kind of like the Cavs and Kevin have to just, I think, both act like adults in this and try to make each other happy. That's where I'm at.
Maybe having JB as coach helps a little bit.
I think the JB coaching thing is just like, I know a lot of people in Memphis told us he wasn't very good and all that stuff. It is so clear. Like Colin Sexton has done a couple interviews of late that you can listen to, like Chris Haynes. He's on 92.3. I did a little tweet thread of that if you want to go check that out and if you don't want to track down the audio. But one of the few things I feel like I've actually gleaned from Colin in that is that like he really vibes with JB. Kevin has had a long relationship with JB. I do think there's something to what JB is. The funny thing is they had a better version of what JB sort of his template is in Ty Lue and they fucked it up. So what do I know?
Yeah, for real though. I'm just looking into it now. Kevin was drafted in 2010. Jesus. He was drafted in 2010, so him and JB do have a history of JB being an assistant in Minnesota, so it's just kind of more funny how life finds a way. But I do think that definitely plays a factor, but I think, like you said, the Cavs had this in Ty Lue, but I have a few stances on that as well. Like, apparently Kobe and Ty didn't see eye to eye, and since Kobe, you know, was kind of given full control after Dan had a stroke, I felt like that was going to be inevitable, that Ty was on his way out if they didn't see eye to eye on the direction of the team. It was beneficial for Ty's health as well, because I've spoken to him in the offseason and just recently where he said like he's in a lot better place. He was in a lot better place mentally compared to last year when he was with Cleveland. And so, like, I think that definitely helps out. But, like, overall, if you have, like, a template for a coach, I'd rather have Ty Lue 10 times out of 10 over JB Bickerstaff, because Ty Lue is such a good coach, and he's going to make such a team happy this year when they hire him.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, give us another guy here for the second segment.
Okay, let's just keep on jumping down. We'll just go in order here. I gave Tristan Thompson an A+, because you and I agree, and I'm sure a lot of people can make the case, it's either him or Colin Sexton was Cleveland's best player this year. And Tristan, you know, is just a pro's pro. He made chicken salad out of chicken shit in terms of this Cavs season, embraced the role of a mentor, and was putting up career numbers of 12 points and 10.1 rebounds. And if he departs in free agency, whether it's via sign and trade or just exiting out stage right, he kind of left an impression on these young guys, and like obviously he has a good rapport with him, and like Darius especially looks up to him. He's part of that clutch connection that they have, but or as you would say, that's pretty clutch. But I think I'd give Tristan an A+ for this season just because of how well he's played, and you know, just been a lot of fun just watching him play his ass off probably for the last time in a Cavaliers uniform.
It is frankly still very remarkable to me that Tristan Thompson looked washed that last title run, like truly washed, and has been this good a couple years.
Yeah, ago. I think, you know, just that Iron Man streak and four title runs, like that fourth year, I think everyone was exhausted. Was it Brian Windhorst who said that everyone in the Cavaliers organization was just mentally and physically just completely drained?
Yeah, I think so.
And then LeBron was walking around like he was fresh as a rose. Like, I think that's
LeBron's a crazy. LeBron is one of one, like with that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So I think everyone was just kind of burnt out by that fourth run, and Tristan especially, and like people were kind of down on him after that. Maybe he won't be as durable going forward, knock on wood, but he's still a hell of a player, and I think he will make whatever, again, like Ty Lue, whatever team he ends up with that is likely a playoff contender, Tristan will make them very, very happy, and I feel like there's going to be a few teams throwing him attractive offers his way, because the free agent market ain't that great. Tristan's played really well in a contract year to hopefully, and plus having Rich Paul as his agent, all this lines up really well for him to get a nice payday from some team.
One other thing I'll say about Tristan is that we don't know if he has played his last game in a Cavs uniform, and if he has, that really sucks to me that we will not sort of get proper closure on that. That to me is one of the real kind of outlying things about this Cavs season, that if Tristan's done, like, you know, that's a wrap, and I think that would really suck. He's been, I think, the leader of the team this year. Colin, I think, has probably been I think Colin's been the best player for the most part, or at least kind of had the most splashy kind of plays. I think certainly like that. Do you remember that dunk he had against Miami? I think that was like maybe the play of the season.
Yeah.
With Tristan, I think he's just been the leader of the team this year. Has kind of been the pro's pro day in and day out. And I think kind of that
unexpected is expected with him too. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely voiced his frustration a little bit last year, I think. But, you know, this is a guy that has handled things kind of the right way, was kind of a rock amid all the Beeline stuff in a way that Kevin, you know, wasn't. And there's something to be said for that. Okay, one last break. We'll be back with more Lockdown Cavs after this. Evan and I are back here for our last episode of the week. Evan, we'll do two more. You wrote about a lot of the core guys on the team. You know, I think I'll just say this. I'm going to pick one here.
Yeah, please.
Kevin Porter Jr. is someone that we have talked about enough, so I'm going to skip him. Mm-hmm. You give him an A plus, and I think it's for what he does. I think we've talked about him so much. I don't want to rehash that. Can you explain giving Andre Drummond a B minus?
See, the thing is,
because I'm going to hate on that.
Go ahead, man. I went back and forth on this, and I'm starting to, like, I try to look at the big, and I elaborated on it a little bit. I said, his grade carries the fact that you and I have both heard that Drummond is pretty likely to accept his player option this summer, and he's going to be a Cleveland. So I'm looking at the big picture here, and I'm assuming that JB maybe gets him to buy in a little bit more as a pick and roll partner and, you know, plays as a traditional big man. You know, like I said, he's in his eighth season. He doesn't need to freelance his abilities on the floor, and he needs to instead play to his strengths. I feel like JB might be the coach to tap into that. John Daline definitely wasn't.
No.
So there's potential there, and that's maybe me being a bit more of an optimist and just kind of looking at maybe a little bit of the upside here in Drummond. Like, okay, maybe he will try to bring the ball up every now and then, and maybe he'll attempt an ill-advised three where you and I will both just be completely exasperated by it. But I'm holding out hope that having a legitimate coach that this locker room respects is going to allow JB to tap into Andre, because let's be frank, Andre really didn't play much under JB, if I remember correctly. My memory's getting foggy with age.
He played like 8 total games so far. So the sample size is incredibly small, which it feels like it was more than that, but it's only been 8 games. So that is a caveat to all of this.
Yeah, so like, and I think JB has coached I'm looking at his record as we
but not many. It's like maybe like 12 or something like that.
The people ref page. Yeah, it has I'm forget it. It hasn't been a lot. And so I'm just kinda holding out hope that JD can kinda get Andre to buy in, and that's why I was a little bit more generous with my grading. Maybe that just makes me look like more of a dick because I was pretty harsh towards Jetty, but I don't know. Come at me. Drag me, dude. I'm ready.
I give him like a C minus.
I can see that too.
I think he was lazy in defense. I think the three, like, do you know the percentage of his shots that were three pointers? Give me a guess.
Like 15%.
Well, okay, that was actually a lot. It's 12%, which is 12% too high. He should not be taking three pointers. Like, it is absurd to think that he will ever be a good 3-point shooter. Look, like, you know, his turnover rate was in those 8 games was as bad as it has ever been for him in his NBA career. And 19.6%, it was already a rock. It was a wildly high 18.7 with Detroit. Those were both high, like what set career highs for him. And that's not good. His usage rate was super high despite him like kind of not having the impact you'd want. I just don't think he was all that good in those 8 games. They need, I would do the trade again. I'm not going to sit here and tell you like you should have just like rolled in this out the cap. I don't trust the Cavs to not do a Jarrett Jack Earl Clark redux in the summer. You know, I don't trust them not to do something stupid like
that.
Hey,
you said that, man. They could bring him back on the bed, man. You never know. Those two specifically. God.
Yeah. But like, do you remember, I'm gonna find out how much Jared Jack paid that they paid Jared Jack, because it's an absurd amount of money. For a team that had Deion Waiters and Kyrie Irving, they're like, ah, Jared Jack. Let's do the thing. But when I look at just what Drummond did, I don't think he was good with the Cavs, and I don't think he was particularly like fitting in with what they need him to do. The more and more I talk to players, the more and more that I sort of think the one of the top five most defining things about your career is really just like willingness to like settle into a role, settle into like knowing what you're good at, knowing how you can help your team win. And like, it's sometimes so obvious when guys are not doing that. And like with him, I think with what he's doing with the Cavs wasn't there. And I think if he's going to work with the Cavs, they absolutely need JB Bickerstaff to get him on the right page, to get him kind of doing the stuff that helps him. And if he doesn't, like, you, I think you could see an 82 game version of some of the very frustrating Drummond stuff next year. Again, we need more time to know if this is really going to work or not. I want to see more of him and Kevin as a duo next year and kind of figuring out how that's going to work. I just don't buy that he was at all helpful so far, even though some of the raw numbers are good. There's just a lot of little stuff where I'm just like, I don't know if I quite liked how it worked.
I agree with you, and I promise you I was listening, but I was looking up how much Jared Jack signed for with the Cavs. And did you know he's still playing?
Yeah, he tried to get through the G League last year, didn't he?
He was acquired by the Sioux Falls Skyforce, and then he tore his ACL in his lateral meniscus as well as spraining his MCL in his debut. And then he was reacquired by the Sioux Falls Skyforce on November 26th of 2019. So he's technically in the Miami. He's a part of Heat culture now, but it's a bummer. But he signed for 4 years, $25 million with the Cavs. And no, yeah, I don't know. I think maybe a C-minus would be more fair for Drummond, but I'm really just holding out hope that the potential's there. Like you said, I'd still make that trade 10 times out of 10 because you're sending an expiring contract to John Henson, who put up to decent numbers as a backup, as a reserve big for the Cavs, and a player in Brandon Knight who, weirdly, the Cavs never played at all and, you know, hated John Boeheim because of it. Like, you send that and then a future second-round pick, which I believe off the top of my head was via the Golden State Warriors. Yeah, you make that trade 10 times out of 10 if you're trying to gamble on a player that has all-star upside and, you know, kind of fits in a little bit with, like, the timeline of some of your players on your roster. I mean, like, you look at Larry Nance and Jetty, it makes sense. But, I mean, yeah, no, I make that trade. And I'm just holding out hope that JV can make it work. So keep on dragging me, Chris. What else you got to beef with?
Drummond is just like one of those things. Oh. It's just still like very bizarre to me with him. And we'll see where it goes. I just have no like good feeling for it amid all that. Okay, just to run through some of the other grades here, let's do one more. You gave Jetty a C+. That's fine. I would go C+, B-. I think Larry Nance is an A, is fair. Colin Sexton an A+.
Oh my Cash Twitter broke me, man. Let's do it.
Colin Sexton. Look, I think A+ is like a little too nice, but I'm pro A. I'm pro giving him an A.
So you're like one of those like teachers where,
yeah, I am.
You make the student work for the A+.
Yeah, okay. I am.
Look,
Colin Sexton was on absolute fire. The last stretch of the season, he was scoring like he had 20 points in like nine of his last like something game, something absurd. It might even be better than I'm remembering it.
Chris, he was voted Eastern Conference Player of the Month,
nominated
by a team who shall remain unnamed.
Their name rhymes with Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yes, exactly. There you go. But he has that going for him.
Truly just one of the best recurring bits by them. Just truly like Colin Sexton nominated. Like just kind of amazing that is like the thing they were doing.
I don't know if you heard me the first time. Let me say it a little louder for the people in the back. It's fucking embarrassing. Like, just nominate Giannis and get over yourselves. But I give him an A+ just because he at the time the season came to a halt, and I think he was for a while, that he was Cleveland's leading scorer. I do take in the fact that his three-point shot like abandoned him at the beginning of the year, and then he was able to like round it out and become a respectable three-point shooter again.
And like take them at a higher clip. It's still one of the most absurd things to me of this season.
Exactly. And then, again, maybe this is a bit more of the long-term potential here, but you and I were both singing the praises of Colin Sexton under JB Bickerstaff because JB ran just like a simplified offense for a young guard that is pick and roll heavy, and his assist numbers were finally going up with it. Like, I think there's a potential here that Colin could be one of Cleveland's best players, and that's either off the bench or starting or with another team. Who knows? Because nothing is ever certain with this basketball team, but I think he was just a lot of fun to watch this year, and he kept games entertaining for me that turned into like absolute massacres, because Colin, at least for every single game that he's in, would give you 110% every single night, and he did that as a rookie, even though it was frustrating to watch him play, and then, you know, just watching his growth and transformation, like, has been a lot of fun, and maybe we're getting close to, like, getting a good idea of what Colin Sexton is, and we'll probably will in his midway into his junior season, if you want to go rookie sophomore. But I think he's an A-plus player, Chris, and I think you're just a harsh teacher. You're like the one teacher I had in high school who gave me a D on a paper and told me I could do better, and she was right, but doesn't mean you have to be a jerk about it.
Okay. I think where I would just knock him slightly is just I think the defense is still coming along.
It's poopy, but
yeah, like there's some stuff where you're like, okay, like you can lock guys up, you're getting a little better at it from time to time, but it is a little inconsistent still. I think if you just look at the passing stuff, it's slowly getting better. He talked about that on his 92-3 hit where he's like, I need to not just get the assist for other teammates, but I need to get the hockey assist to pass it to someone who's going to pass it to somebody else to get them an open shot. That's going to come in time. I think that's one of the things where if you lose the end of that season, some of the momentum he was building, I don't know how you can – even if they come back in July or something, like I don't know if you can pick that right up and kind of carry it from there. But I think he was very, very good this year. I think I think Colin's a NBA caliber player. I think the FU he has to him is kind of great. I think there's a lot. I came into the season like a little bit sort of unsure. Like I was wondering, okay, if Darius Garland just like comes out and kills it, like, you know, what does that mean for Colin? Even though I still have questions about Colin, I have so many more questions about what Darius is and where Darius is headed that I'm just like, I know that Colin's going to be able to play in this league. Whereas with Darius, I don't know what's going on. And I think for the Cavs, like, even if Colin's not going to be your one guy, he's probably, I think, on your best version of yourself. I think he's probably like not maybe even your two. I think he's like your 3-4 kind of guy in terms of the hierarchy and the team, and that how that works out will be interesting to see. I do think he's a good player. I do want to see him keep developing, and I do think that guy, I think there's something to be said for his attitude, for his love of the game, for just so many little things that don't show up in the stats and stuff with him that are cliches, but they're true, and they're with him. Like, he makes so much of this true in a way that isn't always the case with certain guys.
No, I agree, and I think I don't know, it's hard to put a cap on Sexton necessarily, but our colleague David Zabek did tweet 2 days ago at 8:33 a.m. from on Twitter for Android, just, you know, because I have the tweet in front of me right now. He said this to friend of the pod, Jeff Namina, last week, but he thinks a good comp for Sexton might end up being Ben Gordon. Do you think that is a fair comparison with what we have, like, footage-wise and, like, body work, knowledge of his body work? Do you think that's a fair comparison?
Ben Gordon. I can't say that I have like a I don't want to not answer this, but I feel like I just don't feel like I have like a clear higher like answer that, because I don't have like a clear read on like how Ben Gordon played. You know, I don't want to pun on that, but I just don't have I have a great answer on that. Can I tell you who his similarity scores put him most like on the Raptor predictions on 538 to kind of do that?
Sure.
Let's
do it.
And he still categorizes a project there, which I would, you know, disagree with. And none of these are that similar, which is sort of interesting. Zach LaVine is his first one. 2016 Zach LaVine at a 51. Yeah. Brandon Knight in 2013. 2004 DeJuan Wagner is a 37. Malik Monk in 2019, De'Aaron Fox in 2019, then Dennis Smith, Derrick Rose in 2010, D'Angelo Russell in 2017, Devin Booker in 2018, and Sebastian Telfair himself in 2006. The thing is, none of the similarity scores. What?
That is all over the spectrum, like some of those names.
Yes, but it's none of them is like higher than, you know, none of them are higher than 51, which is Levine. And then if you look at like some of the percentile stuff for him, like, you know, there's very little, like his assist percentage is actually like a little above average, his turnover percentage a little below average, but like a lot of the free throw stuff, the usage rate, some of the defensive and rebounding numbers are all like towards the bad end of the spectrum, and that's like a little weird. Again, he's had four head coaches. He's played on some really, really bad teams in 2 years. I think he's good. I think these models undersell him becoming a little bit more than like, you know, just a marginal guy, I think, are a little bit wrong. But and we'll have to see how he impacts winning in a couple of years' time. But I do think Collins is a player, and I do think he's been, you know, probably the leading bright spot of the season. Tim, KPJ, and Tristan are probably the three guys that I would say. Who are the three best examples of things that went right for the Cavs? To me, it's those three guys.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's either those three, and then maybe you could say Larry Nance. That's just been a lot of fun to watch as well. Just kind of finding his role with the Cavs. He's like a jack-of-all-trades, off-the-bench, high-energy big guy. Like, pretty cool with that. And he plays small forward now, which is pretty neat. He accepts it.
Yeah.
Confirmed with us that is what he plays. So, Locked On Cavs exclusive here, folks.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Evan, any final thoughts as we get out of here? Any final grade you want to just takes you want to share as before we head to the weekend, or something you're looking forward to do as we have like a 3-day Easter weekend? Even though, you know, no one should be having their normal Easter festivities.
Yeah, man, it's a real bummer. Actually, I hate Easter. It's like one of my least favorite holidays.
Same.
It's complicated. You're not my therapist, Chris. I don't want to dish that on you, but
no. It's fine.
I would like to give a quick shout out to Frenemies of the Pod, the Chasedown. Their project that they have been working on has been super duper, like, behind the, like, Chris and I have been aware of it since the beginning, and like they put a lot of work into it, and like they recorded over the last 2 weeks, I want to say, but they even put even more work in there beyond that. And they just dropped episode one today. We're recording this on Thursday, and it was really awesome. Just as like a good lead in. And I told Justin privately that like you could feel how it was palpable how excited and enthusiastic he and Carter were to talk about honestly the greatest moment in Cleveland sports history, at least in our lifetime. And they have a killer lineup of guests, including Bomani Jones and Jason Lloyd and Larry Nance Jr., who was, you know, on Locked On Cavs before. So
yeah, and they didn't ask him about soccer, so they can, I love them, but they can have
imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. So I thank them for that. But no, really, go check them out. This is non-podcast Evan talking on his podcast thing, like, go check it out. Like, they put a lot of hard work into it, and like, the editing is really great, and I think it's going to be even more fun, especially because Justin's kind of giving me breadcrumbs on certain things they discuss and certain things certain guests said, so I think it'd be definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, we'll have to talk with them again at some point if they're, you know, gonna, you know, come.
They might be too big for us at this point. They got Bomani Jones on their show. Him and Carter are basically like best friends at this point.
I had Ryan Jones. Ryan Jones is a Bernie guy, and that's my guy now. I'm just saying that episode's great. You should go listen to the Ryan Jones episode. It was honestly maybe my favorite interview I've done besides Larry on this show. And that was really excellent.
Yeah, maybe we'll do it. Listen to that episode of Chris and Ryan Jones, where they don't talk about farming. They talk about LeBron's, because his Twitter handle is Farmer Jones.
Yes. Okay, I didn't ask him about that, and I just like, I'm glad that I don't know that. Like, why?
It's part of the mystique at this point. But
Evan, I'm gonna kind of quick suggestion here. Should we do a book club
for the listeners, or just the two of us?
No, for the book, like, for the listeners, we'll pick a Cavs NBA book. I have a couple of suggestions. We'll figure out which one is fair. But are you into doing a book club?
Sure, I have time.
Okay.
I mean, I'm being legitimate. I'm just like thinking, like, yeah, that's not a bad idea. Like,
yeah. Let's do it. I got a couple good basketball books that I can think of that are all Cavs related ish or like just really, really worth reading. You know, here's the four that I'm thinking. We'll put up a poll and we'll see what people say. Loose Balls by Terry Pluto. It's about the ABA. The LeBron book that Ryan Jones wrote, which is great. the Windhorst and McMenamin 2016 title book and the Jason Lloyd, the Blueprint 2016 title book. We'll put a poll up on the Lockdown Cavs feed. And we'll, whatever you guys vote on is the one we'll do.
Yeah, we will. And then Chris and I, well, I won't give a full report, but maybe I might, because Chris might not give me an A+ if I don't, but no, that'd be a lot of fun.
Evan, you're an automatic A+ in my book because you answer my questions about Realm of the Wild.
Realm of the Wild is Breath of
the Wild. Did I really? Breath of the Wild. I'm sorry. I'm going to, just dunk on me now. I don't get an A. I get a
Wait,
D.
Before we go, you need to tell everyone your harrowing journey to buy a Nintendo Switch because
no one knew how hard.
I've been wanting to talk about this for a while. No one knows how hard Chris had to work to find a Nintendo Switch.
I did so many, like, I had the Wario64 account notification sent to my phone. I had, like, you and shouts to Ed DMing me and texting me, like, when those things were, when they were coming in. I was able to get one because the legend, Ryan Morton, who I'd never met in person until I looked like I was buying drugs from him in a Giant Eagle parking lot, had bought two. And I don't want to get into the nitty gritty of that because that's just like a whole random thing. But lucked out. I was able to buy his Switch from him, just didn't have to like pay a market charge, didn't have to wait several weeks for it because they're like still not in stock. And I was able to get one. And I now own a Nintendo Switch and I have Animal Crossing, which is great. The new Zelda game, which is just incredible, and everything I would ever want in that franchise, and which was the first franchise of my youth. And then I have Mario Kart 8, which is great, and my wife and I have a ton of fun with that, and she's actually gotten into it as well, and isn't like,
there you go.
She's hooked now. You know, she gets really into it. She's like more into the turnips than I am in terms of Animal Crossing. She was like really happy when she was able to sell them the other day for like 42 more bells per turnip than she paid for them. She was just really happy about making that profit. But it was crazy. Ryan and I drove like 30 minutes to meet Ryan. I bought it from him, cashed up him the money like right then. And it looked like I was buying drugs from out of the back of his car probably. But it was kind of exhausting, honestly, trying to track one down. I don't recommend trying to do that. I would just like hope they go in stock soon, which apparently they're going to be restocked soon, according to Nintendo. But Nintendo mm-hmm. Switch approved and was worth it. But I would not want to go through that again to try to track one down because, oh my God, that took a lot of, that took like way too much of my brain power for that.
Yeah, bless your heart. Like, I had no idea there was a shortage. And then I was kind of like looking at it, like, oh, wow, there really is one. And I'm like, oh, well, when I turned mine on, it's just kind of like,
There were times where, like, I would go in, like Best Buy or the Walmart website, and they would have them in stock, and I would, like, get it in my cart, and then it'd be gone within, like, a minute. It was wild.
That's about as wild as, have I ever told you, not to steal your thunder here, but how I got a Nintendo Wii as a kid?
No.
So, I, too, really, like, I love Legend of Zelda. It's my favorite series, is my favorite franchise, much like Chris, and Breath of the Wild is actually my favorite game ever, and I'm really glad Chris is enjoying it.
Oh, it's
and,
so good.
So
it's $40 on if you buy the Amazon digital code right now, it's only $40 on Amazon.
You too got the Wario 64 notification when we're recording.
I did.
Great account. Follow it if you want to blow a lot of money on cheap video games. But so when Twilight Princess came out, I got it for the GameCube, but I also bought it for the Wii because I just wanted it. And my dad's like, why did you buy it? I'm like, well, I'll get a Wii someday. And then unbeknownst to me, like, because that was a launch title with the Wii when it came out in like October, November, I asked for it for Christmas that year. My parents said we couldn't find one. And then like I was kind of bummed, but like, you know, I was 12.
Wii's were like so hard to find.
They were. And like all my friends got one and like I had FOMO because of it. And then so my dad like actually felt bad, and my dad works in like the corporate scene for retail, and actually found like the UPC numbers and the tracking information for the GameStop in my hometown, and tracked the shipment from a Nintendo, like when Nintendo was sending out Wiis, and he literally sat there and was tracking the truck on his work computer, and then walked in as soon as the truck finished its shipment, and then said, "All right, I'll buy one." So my dad did some covert shit to surprise me the Wii for my birthday, and I am a very happy boy, and I will never sell it just because of the memories from that day. But
Evan's dad, a real legend.
Bill Dameron, real 10 out of 10 guy, A plus. Like, would give him two thumbs up over here. He brought me into this world, and
yes,
he bought me a Switch, and then he said, "I'm never buying you a fucking video game system ever again." And then bought me and my brother an Xbox, a PlayStation, and now we're on current gen. But either I pay for those now. But either way, you know what I mean.
Yes. What a legend. Shouts to good parents. Good parents are great. Hope you guys get to face him with your parents this weekend. Evan and I will be back after the weekend. We got to figure out what seasons we're going to talk about next week, as kind of the Lockdown Network continues talking about the best seasons in franchise history. I think 2016 is certainly going to be on that list, but we have some other ones. We'll certainly kind of figure out what other ones we'll talk about. And that'll be all coming next week. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. Practice social distancing. And we'll talk to you next week.
Happy Easter.
Yeah, happy Easter. I don't, you know, don't, but I'm kind of glad that Bunny Day is coming so I can be done with that. But, you know, happy Easter to everybody and practice social distancing.
Bro.
Hey, Chris Manning here for one last thing. If you haven't checked it out already, be sure to check out the newest podcast in the Locked On Network, Chad Ford's NBA Big Board. He's had great episodes with people like Mark Stein and John Hollinger breaking down the NBA draft, and Chad Ford is back. And you're going to want to check out his podcast. That's it, the newest podcast in the Locked On Podcast Network, Chad Ford's NBA Big Board. Find that wherever you are listening to podcasts.